Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our awesome guest is JD Graffam, the owner of two agencies and a portfolio of SaaS businesses, and we're going to talk exactly about that. This episode is brought to you by Abstract, design workflow management for product design teams using Sketch. With Abstract, you can version design files, present work, request reviews, collect feedback, and give developers direct access to all specs, all from one place. Sign your team up for a free 30-day trial today by heading over to abstract.com. Hi, JD.
Hey, Jane. Happy to be here.
We're absolutely thrilled. So, since we're going to talk about your businesses in the main part of the conversation, maybe you could tell about yourself in person and what's your background? What did you do before you became a SaaS mogul?
Well, I would go all the way back to the beginning. And when I was at college, I'll tell you that my background there was that I wanted to get into the advertising world as a boy and young man. And so I always had that in the back of my head. Then I went to college where there was no advertising or marketing program. So I studied English and creative writing, which had, you know, at the time I thought no practical use for my career going forward. There was no graphic design program. The computer science program there wasn't very robust. So I studied English literature and learned how to write poetry and short stories and essays. From there, I still remained interested in the idea of the advertising world. And so I got an internship as a graphic designer and learned from there. The only reason I even got into graphic design, though, was because of my background in English. I was asked to be the editor of a literary magazine, and it was ugly when I took it over, and I wanted it to be beautiful. And so I taught myself graphic design in order to make the literary magazine excellent. And from there, I learned graphic design. And from graphic design, I learned about Dreamweaver. And this was in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so I would build websites with Dreamweaver without having to code using table layout by clicking, you know, the insert menu item and insert table. And then I would drag the shape the shape of the table around and then slice up all the graphics that I built in Photoshop and insert them into a visual version of a table layout. Eventually, I got a job as a web designer and moved up in my career until I landed with a real grown-up job at Hilton Hotels Corporation, which has a headquarters for their website team in Memphis, Tennessee, where I was getting married, and quickly learned that I was not, in fact, coding, and I had no idea I wasn't coding, and my boss told me that I needed to learn how to code. So I found a course and had my employer, Hilton, send me to some training. I went to that training and picked up on it very quickly, and from there, I wrote a book called CSS for Print Designers to help print designers who were in a similar place as me, where they were doing a lot of web design work but didn't know how to code. And this was, you know, around 2009, 10, 11. I started writing this book and giving a workshop all over the country called CSS for Print Designers. Mm-hmm. Then I started my agency, and we'll talk about that later on. But that's kind of the arc of my career and how I landed in this industry.
Did you ever really get to work as a marketer? Or not so much?
No, I became disenchanted with the industry. I landed. I got married, as I was telling you, in Memphis. But when I got engaged, I moved to Memphis from a small town in Mississippi, where I was working as a graphic designer, and I took a job at my first, you know, real grown up advertising agency here, and lasted exactly 90 days, which was the introductory period. And after 90 days, I was told that since it was my introductory period, that I was not being fired. It just didn't work out. And, you know, it was a hiring mistake for them. They put me in the wrong role or hired for the wrong position because I wasn't what they wanted or needed. So it wasn't a fit, and it was kind of a hiring mistake for them. And for me, it was a learning experience because I took a lot of lessons from that experience and found myself, you know, kind of on my own without a job in a big city. I was from a small town originally and had lived in smaller towns my entire life. So here I am. I've moved up away from family to get married, and I'm in the big city, and I'm unemployed, and I'm having to figure out how to make ends meet as an adult who's, for the first time in my life, responsible for my own finances and on my own. And I had to, you know, pay my truck insurance and my rent and truck note and all my expenses. And I had to do this without a job. So I found a way to make money by freelancing. But I had to figure out how to freelance without a computer. It was quite the experience.
It wasn't exactly the book tour that paid your bills back then.
No. This was before the book tour. Yeah, the time I'm talking about is probably around the end of 2005. That was the year that Katrina hit Louisiana, and I'm from Louisiana originally, so I remember that. And it's also the year that the Houston Astros, my favorite baseball team, was in the World Series. So 2005 was an eventful year for me for a lot of reasons.
You have two agencies and a portfolio of SaaS businesses. So what came first, the chicken or the egg, and how did it evolve over time?
That's a great way of putting it. The original business was my design agency, Simple Focus. At the time when I started it, Simple Focus went under a different name, and had to change the name after a year. But you know, I'll call it Simple Focus. So the short answer is Simple Focus came first. What happened was I was always freelancing or moonlighting when I was working any job, and that's because I was sort of trained never to feel secure because of my experience with the ad agency and moving to the new city and getting let go after just 90 days. And so I was always prepared to, you know, be on my own if things didn't go well. And so I was always freelancing. Well, after 3 years of working at Hilton and freelancing, I put together a spreadsheet of how much money I was making as a freelancer compared to how much money I was making in my salary at Hilton, and then ran the numbers on how much time I was putting into each. And I was making more as a freelancer in 20 hours a week than I was in my full-time job at Hilton in 50 or 60 hours a week. So it became a simple math formula to make the decision that I should probably dedicate my time to pursuing this freelance and turn it into a business, because I'd always kind of had in the back of my head that I wanted to be a business owner one day. And so I chose to pursue it when the numbers made sense. As a freelancer, I had a moniker for my freelance business called Torque Design Shop. Torque like like horsepower, not like like the dance move. And in any case, as I was preparing to quit my job at Hilton, I decided that I wanted to rebrand myself and dissociate the freelancer JD Graffam from the agency that I wanted to build one day. And so I did that. I think it was a very early strategic decision that I made that was absolutely right and helped me build up an agency that's got a brand that's more than just me personally.
Great strategy. And I think we didn't give enough background to our listeners. So I first heard of your business model at BaconBiz in 2016, I think. And you stood up there on stage and talked about the way you manage your multiple businesses and how acquiring new businesses is a way to grow in how you use your agencies to service them. So the agencies we're talking about are exactly serving that purpose. And one of my questions is, why did you separate a design agency from a product agency, which is ClearFunction one?
So yeah, ClearFunction is not a product agency. ClearFunction is a custom software development agency. So I'll fill in the blanks. No, it's fine. Let me fill in the blanks for you and the listeners. Because even at Bacon Biz, I didn't really get into the details of the structure too much. So in 2009, I started what was at the time a web design agency called Simple Focus that specialized in what was referred to in 2009 as database-heavy application, database-heavy websites. So what we would call today, what we would call today digital products, right? And so we were doing basic web design projects, you know, marketing websites, as well as digital product design and user experience. And after a few years, Simple Focus was really successful and profitable. And I had an opportunity with some friends to buy their SaaS from them. And this was a SaaS that was born out of the era when 37 Signals had built Basecamp, and you know, it seemed like every digital agency on the planet wanted to, you know, get rid of their clients and run their own product. And this was when the website Clients from Hell was born out of, and many other things were going on. And so the original creators of this product, Pulse, had a little digital agency called ClearFunction, ironically. We'll come back around to ClearFunction because it's not what you think it is yet. So some friends of mine in Memphis had this agency, ClearFunction, and they wanted to do more product design and development. And so they put together a little marketing shtick where they were going to promote themselves by showing that they could design and build a SaaS product in 1 month. And they called this initiative the 1 month app, and they created a blog and they blogged about it every day. And it got really popular in the web design and development community. And it landed on the front page of Dig, which was a big thing back then. It got a lot of, it got a lot of buzz. And, you know, they launched it in a month, and Pulse was really popular among web design agencies and known and had a reputation. And then a couple of years later, they launched version two of Pulse and then monetized it. And it turned into a nice little business. After a few years more of operating that business, it was 5 or 6 years old at this time, the founders were ready to move on, and they were friends of mine. They were from Memphis, and I kept talking to them about saying, hey, you need to let me run your Pulse for you. I'll take it over. Let me buy it. And finally, they gave in and let me buy the business from them so that they could move on. One guy wanted to focus on his career as a director of technology for San Francisco startup. Another guy wanted to get into the ministry full time. And so I bought Pulse. And so at this time, I was thinking, okay, Pulse will be a little side project that Simple Focus does. It'll help us position ourselves for better, for more product work, because we can talk about running our own product as well as doing client work. But then a couple of years later, I had another opportunity to buy SaaS. And so I did. And I did that several times, and I've continued to do that. And that's how I began buying SaaS businesses. Unrelated to all of that, a few years into it, about 3.5 years ago, I co-founded ClearFunction, which was a custom software and development agency, with a former client of mine, Colin Neller, and the two of us started ClearFunction together. Now, the reason we started ClearFunction was because Simple Focus was always a design-centric agency, so user experience and, you know, some front-end development and UI development. But Colin's expertise and the team he has built at ClearFunction is architect-level, senior enterprise level developers, and they do serious custom software development for everything from payments and you know, compliance needs and modernizations that Simple Focus was always referring out, because we would get tons of inquiries about, well, do you do software development? And I would say, no, but we can partner with them, or we can partner with them. And co-founding ClearFunction 3.5 years ago was one way to sort of create a solution for those customers who come to Simple Focus looking for software development as well. And we've kept the company separate. They have separate ownership structures. I own Simple Focus, and Colin and I together own Clear Function. The software businesses are me, though, and those companies hire Clear Function or Simple Focus or freelancers or other agencies as needed so that they can operate.
So the cash flow is really, really independent between all of those.
Absolutely. They're all separate entities. They all have their own books. They're all run as independent businesses of one another.
Now let's talk about your portfolio of SaaS businesses. Your growth strategy was really amazing. I remember that graph when instead of the hockey stick growth of one company, you had that way of adding little steps with the recurring reliable revenue of multiple companies. So tell us more. How did you come up with that strategy?
Sure. So, I mean, it's basic business strategy for companies that reach a level of saturation. So if you think of McDonald's in, Northeast Louisiana, where I was raised, it's at some point they have to stop building McDonald's restaurants because there's just the market won't support any more McDonald's. So what does McDonald's do? They acquire Chipotle. And so that's how McDonald's can grow when they've reached market saturation. That's how any business that reaches some level of saturation can grow. My hypothesis was at the time, and to a degree still is, was that a successful SaaS business is one that has achieved a level of stability and a natural size, where it's able to remain the same size or grow very incrementally on its own without any customer acquisition cost. So I have bought companies that have basically zero customer acquisition cost. Well, I should say not basically, but they have a $0 customer acquisition cost, and they still manage to get as many customers each month as they lose through natural churn. And my emphasis has been on growing two ways over the last several years, and that is one by attacking churn and continuing to keep the customer acquisition cost at zero, but by reducing churn, you can grow. Mm-hmm. And then also by buying more SaaS businesses that fit that model that are very conservative investments. And so these businesses are not high growth, so they sell at a more attractive multiple for me. I place a premium on something that's stable over something that's high growth and risky, because I'm not betting on what it's going to be making in 2 years. I'm betting on what it's made for the last 3 years. And so it's just a more traditional business valuation and acquisition process. It seems novel in our world of software, but it's actually just base level business sense that has existed in other industries since forever ago.
Great. So you value organic growth, which comes probably from the word of mouth and some inbound traffic, over exponential hockey stick model.
Right. I have no interest in buying a hockey stick because I don't want to jump on that rocket ship and ride it. In fact, as I've built my portfolio out, I know that if any of my products do take off like that, I will either spin them off and operate them fully independently of my portfolio and put somebody in charge of it if I want to retain ownership, or I will just sell it and take, take the money off the table because it doesn't fit my model.
Seriously. So one of my questions was, did any of your products hit that? And the question is really, the answer is really surprising.
Yeah, no, I haven't bought anything that's done that. No. And it's because one of the things is I'm not taking those chances. Right. So, my businesses pay themselves back in anywhere from 1 to 2.5 years. And then after that, they're operating at anywhere between 60 and 80% margins if I want them to. Sometimes I choose to invest a little bit more time or money into them, but at any point, any of them can be put into sort of a couple of ticks above maintenance mode and build up cash very quickly.
K, Can you give us an overview of the businesses that you own? We're going to include the links in the show notes for sure, but we'd love a couple of sentences about each, like what's the brief story? And I wonder if you have like a favorite one or the one that dominates.
Well, I have one that I'm spending more time with right now because we do a thing called a swarm where we spend more time on one for a period of time and rotate from one to the other. But well, I'll start with Pulse because that was the original acquisition. Pulse is a cash flow management app for small businesses. Basically, it lets anybody who needs to get a handle on the money they're going to make in the future or want to make in the future, as opposed to what you do with something like QuickBooks, where you account for money that's in the past. So it's about managing your cash flow forecast. And there's not really a lot of options on the market for this. And it's a tiny addressable market, but Pulse has carved itself out as the niche leader. And it's, you know, it's my oldest app as well. It was originally built in 2006 or so. So it's, really, really simple and easy to use. But it's more collaborative and gives you better reports, and it's simpler than trying to figure out a complicated spreadsheet. And in fact, it's easier to update than a spreadsheet, because if you leave your cash flow spreadsheet for 4 to 6 weeks and you come back to it, you basically have to start over. With Pulse, it's much easier to pick up where you left off and share reports and connect to QuickBooks and Xero and things like that. I also own an app. My second acquisition was Ballpark, which is getballpark.com. The Pulse URL, by the way, is pulseapp.com. Getballpark.com was a product that was originally built by the guys at MetaLab. Now, MetaLab are known for being the agency that was hired to design Slack, and they've got blue-chip customers like...
That's Canadian.
Yeah, they're Canadian. They've got blue-chip customers like Facebook and their own portfolio of products. Ballpark was... I think Andrew Wilkinson, the founder, I think it was his first product that he built inside of MetaLab, and he got it to a certain size and was wanting to build another product. So they built another product and another product and another product. Well, one of the products that they built, Flow, really took off, and then another product they built really took off. And the next thing you know, these others were 10 or more times the size of Ballpark. And so Ballpark just didn't command their attention. And he wanted to make sure that it went somewhere where someone could operate it and take better care of it for the customers who had signed up. And that was us. So I bought Ballpark. And we've completely overhauled it and redesigned it. The customers absolutely love it. It is really simple and easy to use, time tracking, invoicing, but also estimate generation. So it's great for sending simple estimates and doing pricing for customers. And it also has some great reporting and cash flow features as well. So Ballpark, where will be, you know, our goal with Ballpark is to make it a a better version of what Harvest is, frankly, and to do some things that Harvest hasn't done, because their product hasn't changed in 10 years significantly at all. And so we're building a more modern version of that. And we've been working on that for the last couple of years. So it's gotten a lot of time and attention from us, more than the others, because we think it's a real strategic opportunity with this market to sort of chip away at something and innovate in a way that others aren't in the space, although it's a much bigger market. Another product that we acquired was Temper. Now, Temper was something that Josh Pigford built. Josh Pigford, as a lot of your listeners will know, is the kooky founder of Baremetrics. And when Baremetrics took off, his app, his customer satisfaction app, needed some TLC. And so Temper is one of those really simple little apps that lets you embed a one question poll. And that poll has answer of smiley face or frowny face. You know, it's one of those things. You see them everywhere now, integrated into products like Intercom or whatever. Real quick way to gauge customer satisfaction. Temper was one of the very first versions of that on the market. Then I bought Sifter from Garrett Diamond. Sifter app is a very simple bug and issue tracker that's easier to use than Jira and better suited for the agency environment and for bringing people in like clients who aren't as tech savvy as, you know, the type of senior level clear function developer that I was describing earlier, who needs all the complicated features and burn down charts and things like that that come with the enterprise software solutions out there. So it's really built for nimble teams is the way we put it on the marketing site. that's the coded way of saying it's a really good bug and issue tracker for small agencies with 10 or 20 people. Sifter is an awesome product and really big in the Laravel PHP craft community. So anybody in that industry should definitely check out Sifter. Sifter's just always been such a fantastic product. It's in the software world, there's this concept called an opinionated product. And I was having a conversation with Garrett just yesterday or 2 days ago, the founder of Sifter, because we stay in touch, we've become close, about how opinionated Sifter is compared to my other products. And that's one of the things that I love about it, is because it really does force the customer to, you know, do things a certain way, which keeps the whole experience really simple and streamlined. So Sifter is a really great product. And then the last one that I'll say for you, because there's so many, right? and there are others, but these are the big ones, is Curated, which bought from Litmus. Originally founded by Dave Verwer, who went to work with Litmus. So Litmus is, email testing software. Mm-hmm. And Curated is one of those sort of email marketing software, but it's in a really interesting niche where there really aren't a lot of people out there who do what Curated does. Curated makes it really easy to collect all the links of things that you're reading and put them together into an email digest that you can send to your friends and followers. So that people who, for example, liked what Dave was reading about the iOS development community, you know, they would sign up and get a weekly email from Dave about things related to the iOS world. All the news that was fit to read that Dave curated for everybody went into Dave's newsletter. And so he turned that software that he used to generate that newsletter into this product. And it took off from there. And so it's called email digest software, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's a small niche, just like agency bug tracking and agency-centric time tracking and small business cash flow. And so all these products are very niche. Curated, though, to come back around full circle, is what I was telling you at the beginning of the show, or at the beginning of this monologue, is the one that's got all my attention right now. So periodically, me and a couple folks on the team will swarm one of the apps, basically, and give it a bunch of love and attention. And right now, Curated is the one getting a bunch of love and attention. And so by the end of February, we'll be done with the design phase, and then we'll implement it after that. And so Curated is going through some pretty substantial renovations, so to speak, because it's one of the apps that we have that has the most potential for natural and organic growth.
By the way, speaking of Sifter, the founder of Sifter, Garrett Diamond, wrote a great book that I'm going to link to, which is called Starting and Sustaining, which is very, very relevant to SaaS founders. It's about all aspects of running a business.
Yeah, well, I know all about it. I wrote the foreword to it.
Yes, I know. It's a great book. Also, correct me if I'm wrong, did maybe Hiten Shah use Curated at some point for his newsletter, or am I wrong?
No, Hiten definitely is a Curated customer. That's right. We've got a lot of very influential customers. Sketch, the graphic design software, uses it.
When in your bio, you mentioned these product names and you said, oh, and maybe a few other ones that I don't know about. Oh, so how is that possible?
Well, I guess there's just the curation of what I put out there is what that's around. So generally speaking, I talk about buying profitable SaaS businesses, but I'm also a part owner in a bunch of other things as well that are at different stages that may be pre-revenue or not. So, you know, things like that I may not be the key person behind or the majority owner, or I just have some ownership or equity interest in a startup or something like that.
It's interesting. So you obviously operate in the founder world, but you haven't really founded any product of your own. Have you ever thought of doing that, or do you prefer, you know, fixed results?
Well, I certainly prefer fixed results. I actually started a product in 2010-11 called Project List, and it didn't go anywhere. And that was a big learning experience for me, because we put so much love and attention into building a product but didn't follow the steps to build an audience or establish a product market fit, and was sort of frustrated when it just didn't take off like Basecamp, you know, and sort of got down on myself and said, oh, I'm just, you know, I don't have enough Twitter followers. I'm not ever going to be able to send a tweet out and get 200 signups. This isn't fair, you know? And so I kind of got down on myself and had a defeatist attitude. I've since learned that there's just more work that needs to go into it. It doesn't magically just happen on its own. I started two very successful multi-million dollar agencies, right? So I'm definitely a founder behind those. And in the product world, I've got some really interesting products in development that I'm going to take the cap off of soon and reveal to the world that are going to, I think, stand up as their own businesses. Some are very small and niche, and some are really, they really have some major potential in terms of generating revenue very quickly. So we'll see where they go. But I'm certainly working on doing a better job than in 2010 when we were building Project List.
Yeah, it's 8 years later. 8 years of SaaS experience is nothing to sneeze at, really.
Yeah. I should be able to. To start one at this point with the experience that I have. But, you know, it's a lot harder to start a SaaS these days than it was 10 years ago, I believe. There's just a larger community out there. There's a lot more people vying for space in each of these niche markets, and the bigger markets are obviously full too. So you really have to do an exceptional job getting the word out and building a community around these products. And being successful today, I think, is much harder than it was 10 years ago. And that's no dig on the people who started 10 years ago. I just think it's a different space that we're working in now.
Now we have all the tools, but at the same time, that makes the barrier to entry so much lower than it was 10 years ago. So double-edged sword.
I don't know. Everybody has all the tools, though, Jane. So it's really who's going to work with the tools the smartest and hardest.
So do your products help each other somehow? Do they cross-pollinate? Do you cross-market? Do anything else between them?
That's an opportunity that we haven't addressed yet, but it's something that's been in the back of my head whenever I evaluate a possible acquisition is does this create a cross-promotional opportunity? Is there a synergy, to use a cheesy word, with the other products? Is there an overlap where, for example, Sifter users could become Ballpark users, could become Curated users, could become Pulse users, and so on? So I think when we get to a certain scale and we've got some more, you know, time and money to invest into, you know, that sort of marketing regimen, we'll absolutely take that opportunity and use it to grow. But for now, I'm kind of sitting back and focusing on each product individually and making sure that it's keeping its promises to its existing customers, because that's my whole foundational strategy is that when I buy a business, I don't dramatically change it. I'm not trying to 10x it. I'm trying to keep it there as what it was for the people who signed up to use it for what it is.
That's great, because one of my questions was, do you have, you must have developed a kind of a routine, what you do when you acquire someone, something. So could you maybe disclose some of that process?
Sure. Well, one of the things is I have pretty no-nonsense, you know, negotiation style up front. I don't waste a lot of the founder's or the owner's time in getting to, you know, a price. It's either a price that they're comfortable with and I'm comfortable with, or it's not. From there, my due diligence is very fast. You know, I close transactions in 4 weeks or less, which means that I'm making sure that I'm checking everything quickly to make sure that it's all as they said it would be. And then the handover period is like one or two meetings with their developers or the founder, if the founder developed it. And then like something simple like 8 or 12 hours of email support if we have questions, because you have to remember I come from the agency world where we're always working with new customers with different technologies and different stacks and different products and different, you know, websites. So we're used to taking over and managing websites and products for customers. And so it makes it really easy for our team to come in and just step in and take over an entire product from a founder. And that's one of the things that I think stands out with the people that sell to us, is that, like, you know, everybody else they've talked to wants them to stick around for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 18 months to help in transition. And I don't need any of that, because we know what we're doing. And so for the first 6 months, after we take over a product, our goal is to very quickly make a low risk, visible update to the product, like something decorative or something that everybody's been asking for forever, right? and publicize that, hey, we got in and we made the positive improvement right away. And then begin talking to the customers for 6 months and researching customers and getting to know them and just getting comfortable with the customer support rhythm and all of that before we make any significant changes. And usually the significant changes, you know, start getting planned after 6 months, but don't get implemented for 12 or 24 months, because we want to make sure that we're measuring three times, you know, before we cut. And we're not going to like fundamentally misunderstand what it is that people love about this product before we go changing it up.
Yeah, I've been observing. that's a side note, but I've been observing what's going on with Simplecast, and they're revealing like such a dramatic update to what they were before. That software that I use for hosting this podcast, it's like one of examples what can happen when you take over and just redo everything. And I don't think that's the best strategy, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, it depends on what the owner's strategy is. My strategy is, you know, I've already articulated, is to buy something for what it is, not what it can become.
And by the way, in the world of acquisitions, your timelines are like rocket ship fast, right?
Yeah, but I'm dealing with a lot less dollars, right? So I'm not buying multi-million dollar generating SaaS businesses. I'm buying SaaS businesses that have between 200, 300 and 1,000 customers. So they're smaller, they're bootstrapped. You know, I'm working with founders who can make a decision, and I want you to, like, I'm going to rattle off these names, but the founders of Pulse were friends of mine. The founder of Ballpark was Andrew Wilkinson, who's very well respected in the community. You've got Josh Pigford and David Hauser, who I bought Temper from, both very well respected in the community and known entities. Garrett Diamond, everybody loves Garrett. Garrett's very transparent about his whole process and everything that he learns, he shares. And then Dave Verwer, one of the most respected iOS developer, newsletters in the world. So I'm buying from very well-respected people who don't have a lot of incentive to do something stupid like lie or try and take advantage of a situation. They're looking for a simple transaction with somebody that they trust. And that's what I aim to be for the sellers, is somebody that can be trusted. And so we can take a lot of shortcuts, because one of the things that I do is I vet who I buy from. I'm not going to buy from someone who is not, doesn't have a good reputation, you know. And so we can just, you know, short circuit a lot of that, like, you know, by just working with people who are trustworthy.
Yeah, sounds so easy. Like they just fell into your lap. Wonderful fit, you know. But I'm sure there was a lot of filtering the other ones, the rest of them that didn't go through.
Yeah, I have anywhere from 2 to 5 conversations about possible acquisitions in a week.
So, oh, wow.
Those are 20 to 45 minute conversations each. And 90% of the time, I just end up telling them, I don't think you should sell right now. You know, and I become their friend and I give them advice because I'm just telling the truth. Like, first of all, I'm not going to buy. Second of all, anybody that's going to buy from you, here's what they're going to sell to you for. And that's like half of what you want. So I don't think you need to sell right now.
Unfortunately, we need to wrap up today's episode. So one last question for you is, what's your plan? What's your roadmap for the future? Do you just keep buying until you're 90? Or what do you think is going to look like in a few years?
I don't know. Yeah, what motivates me is creating jobs where people can do what they were born to do. So that's my number one motivator. Number two is to be there for my family. But in terms of, you know, what I'm going to be doing to make those things happen, to answer your question, I think one of the things is with Clear Function, I've already handed off complete control of that business to Colin. It was always the plan for him to run that business. And so it sort of serves as an annuity for me. And I, you know, refer business to them and help them out whenever I can. But, you know, Colin runs that business day to day and it doesn't take a lot of my time. I've got a wonderful leadership team at Simple Focus. And a wonderful creative and technical team at Simple Focus. And they're beginning to take serious ownership over, you know, the direction and vision of Simple Focus. And so, you know, I've begun to take some step backs from that business as well in the day-to-day operations so that they can make it into the kind of company they want to be working at. And it doesn't have to, be something that I'm spending every day managing. So I'm spending more time focusing on the software and the apps. And for now, I'm still looking for good opportunities for acquisition, so I'll continue that. But I'm also going to layer in another level of growth, and that is by beginning to add the product enhancements and really focus on the products themselves. Because at this point, I've had each of these apps in the portfolio for years, and I know the customers and we know the customers. And so spending some time, you know, improving the product and then beginning to transition to a posture where we're beginning to spend on customer acquisition and growing them. So, you know, I'm going to continue to grow through acquisition, but also going to begin to grow through trying to acquire customers as well.
Wonderful plan. Well, thank you for sharing your ideas. I'm sure that your insights are like a breath of fresh air because they are absolutely not a classic approach to having just one SaaS product and expecting it to grow.
Well, it makes perfect sense with my background as an agency guy. You know, I'm used to working with a bunch of different customers and products. And so I treat each of the apps like I would a client.
So just to recap, in case any of the listeners missed your secret sauce is having highly skilled team members to take care of all those products, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much. Tell us a bit more, where can people find you online for the exception of those links to the products themselves?
Sure. Anybody that wants to ask any follow-up questions or wants to send me a private message can do that on Twitter at JD Graffam. You can also just email jdgraffam@gmail.com to get to me. Both of those are fine. I'm happy to talk to anybody anytime.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time and hope everything works out for you and your businesses.
Thanks, Jane. Great interview. I appreciate it.